In early April, President Donald Trump announced his Liberation Day tariffs, announcing some of the most aggressive trade measures in decades, imposing levies ranging from 10 to 50% on over 100 countries and a hefty 145% on China. These actions have shaken global markets, erasing trillions of dollars in equity value in just a few days and raising serious concerns about economic stability. Well, joining me today is Adrian Pasch, Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth, who will help us unpack how these tariffs are driving market volatility. We'll explore some strategies to adapt investment portfolios in this turbulent environment, including diversification opportunities and ways to mitigate risk. Adrian, thanks again for your time. Let's start with your take on what exactly these Liberation Day tariffs are and how they came about. What do you think prompted these decisions by President Donald Trump?
Hi, Kieran, and also hello to everybody listening. Yeah, it's been an interesting time in markets. I think to an extent, largely expected in terms of the areas of focus, so tariffs more broadly. But I think what has surprised markets quite a bit is the extent and the swiftness of some of these actions. Definitely a lot more severe than Trump's first term. And things are happening a lot quicker as well. So I think broadly, it's one of those things that you often run into this situation with the US president, where I think the intent is good and he's identified a legitimate issue. But when it comes to the execution, it's not always done in the most thought through way or in the most diplomatic way. And I think that's really where a lot of the damage comes in, because you would typically, just by way of normal diplomatic efforts, these processes are usually undertaken through extensive meetings and negotiations. They, you know, implemented slowly over time, very cognizant of not to disrupt supply chains or trigger adverse economic impacts. And those things seem to have gone out the window completely. But that being said, as I mentioned, I think largely these actions are premised on the US has been overly generous with their consumer demand. The US consumer accounts for quite a bit of a global GDP. And the view is that these consumers are allocating demand to other countries, and the US is not attracting any benefits through that relationship and essentially under-earning on tariffs, and therefore trying to counterbalance that, and in the process, protecting US businesses. So, you know, the view is that some of these imports into the US are being done where they're actually undercutting local US producers to an extent that they can't expand their local industry. So I think it's a valid concern if that's the case, and it's still to be argumented, because I think the US has really thrived if you look at the last few decades in terms of what they've accomplished. And generally, global relationships have been quite strong. So they haven't really adopted this at detriment. I think the second and third order benefits that have come their way have been quite significant. But if you look at the tariffs in isolation, then he has a point. But as I mentioned, it comes to, you know, how you execute on these things. So what has been done is essentially on the 2nd of April, announcement that more than 100 countries will be affected by higher tariffs. They range between 10 and 50%. And South Africa's case, it was 30%, which is a lot more significant than what even our local policymakers thought it would be. The local policymakers thought at worst it would amount to 25%, and it came even ahead of that. And we've seen even worse numbers in some other areas. So immediately it creates a bit of a crisis in confidence, because, you know, how do people think about shipping product abroad? How do they think about managing their inventories, setting up factories, if there's so much uncertainty around the future state of business?
Right. Let's focus on the impact now on South Africa. 30% tariff, more than was expected. How's that going to impact us as a country?
You know, I think it's good to focus on some of the numbers. So if you look at how important is South Africa in the US's life, we constitute roughly 2.5% of their imports. So we're not a material trade partner from their perspective. Yet the US is actually a big client of ours, if you want to put it that way, because essentially almost 9% of our exports come from US demand. So from that perspective, it is actually quite important. And if you look at the actual rand values, South Africa's exports to the US reached about 13 billion in 2023. And that makes up about 2.1% of GDP. And the other meaningful thing is because you have to start to think about how do these things affect specific industries. And then from there, you can think about specific businesses that might be impacted. But 98% of these exports are largely focused on either mining, as you would expect, but then also manufacturing, which is exactly the area that the US is trying to protect on that side. And then obviously implied at the expense of our manufacturing industry. The other areas that get specific attention from a South African perspective is obviously the focus on aluminium and steel tariffs. And those are two major industries for South Africa, and they're central to the US policy changes. So those sectors contribute roughly 30 basis points to South Africa's GDP. And then we shouldn't forget that there's a separate tariff on vehicles specifically that's being imported and parts. And that's a 25% tariff. Now, you've got to think about businesses like BMW, for example. 97% of all the X3 models that are sold in the US are manufactured in South Africa and will be exposed to any tariff turbulence. So you can see how, you know, these things affect the global economy more broadly in terms of growth and inflation. But when you look at the detail, there are some businesses that are significantly impacted on a more granular level.
Let's just broaden the scope a little bit beyond South Africa. I mean, Zimbabwe, our neighbor, they only got an 18% tariff. We got a 30% tariff. That tells you something about how the US is looking at the region. And there are some disparities entering in when we focus in on these countries. How are these tariffs going to affect other countries, including Asia?
Yeah, I think that the way that they approached what they call these reciprocal tariffs was essentially through a rather blunt instrument where they looked at the disparity between the trade volumes on exports versus imports with specific countries, and then they tried to balance the equation to get parity. So essentially, the more the exporting country to the US benefited from US trade, the more severe the new tariff would be to counterbalance that. And that we would have seen. So as you would expect, the Asian economies who do benefit from those exports that they do into the US were hardest hit. And we saw what happened to Vietnam tariffs, for example, close on 50%. Chinese tariffs obviously have been the highlight because, I mean, there's a lot of export out of China into the US. But I think there it's more than tariffs. It's more than just being fair. We know that there's geopolitical tensions and political games happening. And I think that one fits into the broader mosaic of, you know, who's going to be the global superpower over the next 10 years. So China has been, even though growth has been suppressed relative to what they've experienced in previous decades, they're still growing rather fast and catching up with where the US is. And that obviously undermines their leverage and footing on the global stage. So I think there's some other dynamics at play. But as I said, I mean, many of these countries have been affected. And if we look at some of the major ones, I've made some notes here. It's quite tricky to keep up to speed as to everything that's happening to all of these countries, and things are changing quite quickly. But we saw some of the headlines out of China, retaliation in terms of even higher tariffs, and then China responded, and there's been tit for tat going on now for more than a week now. In the European Union, it seems that they'll largely target aluminium and steel imports, and they're focusing on some broader measures by the end of April. But the EU is facing a 20% tariff from the US, and that's really what sparked major concerns amongst the EU bloc members. Canada has responded by saying that they'll retaliate, and they want to act quite decisively. So it seems that there's more tension in that relationship. And then in some other cases, the response has been a little bit more muted. So from the UK, the Prime Minister has indicated that they're open for negotiations. They understand that there's going to be a significant impact, but they rather want to talk through the process. So that's more of the old school diplomatic process that they insist on following, and that we would have been more accustomed to relative to what we've seen over the last few weeks. And in a similar vein, in Japan and South Korea has also decided to rather hold off on retaliation for now. Country in Australia, we've seen a lot of criticism of the policy. However, Australia has yet to announce any specific retaliation either. So it seems they also want to discuss some of the other Asian countries. Taiwan, it seems like the feedback coming out of there is that they want to focus on trade barriers instead. So instead of working on the percentages on tariffs, is opening trade more broadly to the benefit of both parties, which seems like a logical approach as well. And in India, also indicating that they want to follow that approach that facilitates more strategic alignment. But interestingly, Vietnam was one of the countries, as I mentioned, that was said to be impacted quite significantly through the new tariff. And they responded by offering to reduce tariffs on U.S. goods to zero. And diplomats are in Mar-a-Lago to discuss solutions. So a variety of approaches and outcomes. But I think the universal truth across the spectrum is that the various policymakers over the world are quite concerned about what the global growth impact and global inflation impact could be, and also obviously the impact in each of their respective countries.
Yeah, and in the middle of this, Donald Trump announced there was a 90-day pause on many of these new tariffs. China being the exception, they're still facing a staggering 145% rate. And that was raised very quickly from 125%. So what's going on here with the pause?
I think it's anybody's guess, but my feeling is that I think what surprised Trump was some of the more U.S.-centric things that happened within U.S. borders. We've seen his own ratings deteriorate quite significantly, even amongst Republican voters. We saw bond markets not to take too kindly to what's happening from a tariff perspective. And that's really a key concern because, remember, we've discussed this before, where the bond yields are at the moment, the financing cost that the U.S. pays on their debt is currently in excess of $1 trillion. And they're hoping to reduce those yields. And if all these actions spark bonds to sell off and yields to be higher, it has a very detrimental impact on their funding cost, which actually outweighs the benefit from these tariffs, depending on where they ultimately land. But it's a far more important strategic building block in the capital system for the U.S. So I think from that perspective, looking around at those things, we know that leading up to his decision to postpone it for 90 days, he had meetings with various of the big banks, allegedly a meeting with Jamie Dimon, and then some of the previous policymakers. So a lot of concern coming through from big business as well. So I don't think the feedback was positive, and I think the president decided to rather pause and see how things go and open up for negotiations. I think there's still a lingering view that Trump sort of kicked off this process with the view of initiating negotiations. But what's unclear is how on earth you think you can negotiate with 100 countries simultaneously in a constructive manner and look through all the consequences carefully. It just wouldn't be practically possible. So again, a case of, what he wanted to do makes a lot of sense. You know, if it's a negotiating tactic, then that's fine. But it does seem like when it came to execution time, a bit of a blunder from what we can tell at the moment.
Right. And finally, Adrian, how does one adjust to this? How do you tariff-proof your portfolio and diversify in a situation like we're in at the moment?
Look, I think there's multiple things that we need to consider. And if we talk about tariffs, I think broadly what's expected is that we'll enter a stagflationary environment. And so what that essentially means is we'll see higher inflation because prices are going up because of tariffs. And it will ultimately curtail growth to a point where we don't have growth. So higher prices, lower growth. And if you base your portfolio decision solely on that, it will have quite significant impact on how and where you allocate assets in a portfolio, which is obviously the important thing that fund managers need to do. That's the job. But at the same time, at the rate that things are flip-flopping around, you've got to be really, really careful. If we just think about the news that broke around not adjusting any tariffs on electronics and computers into the US. So for businesses like Apple is the largest listed company on the globe, and share prices are moving 10% this way, 10% that way, depending on what the tariff news is. So you've got to be really careful that you don't take a too rigid an approach. I think it's important to be really well diversified and have some flexibility to adjust. But I think the most important thing that you can actually do at this point in time is have a really good sense of what these businesses will be worth through the cycle. Because if you do that, then you set yourself up for taking advantage of opportunities as they may present themselves. So I think there will be opportunities to buy businesses at far more attractive valuations. We see that to an extent already. And I think also investors need to remember that we've actually seen this before, maybe not as severe as what we've experienced over the last week or so. But in Trump's first administration, we had exactly the same rhetoric happening. There was a trade war going on and markets were volatile, exactly the same things that we see now. And the presidency came and it went and tariffs were rolled back and new policies were implemented. So it's very difficult. I don't think you can really plan a portfolio around a specific administration term for 4 years, especially if things are flip-flopping the way they are. I think the logical thing to do, especially from an equity perspective, is to acknowledge that the president will at best be there for 4 years, and that's the term. It could very well lead to a recession, but history tells us that there would have been a recession very likely in any event, because recessions are cyclical. They come and go, and they come and go for different reasons. And you need to invest regardless. If you invest for the long term, you'll experience a few recessions on your way, and you'll experience a few turbulent presidencies on your way. And the best that you can do is to buy good quality businesses at attractive valuations and then hold on for the long term. And if there's opportunities to top up weightings when there's attractive entry points because markets sell off indiscriminately, then utilize those opportunities and try and bolster the portfolio even further from that perspective. So I think, you know, within that, what I'm trying to say is, you know, don't get too obsessed with the nitty-gritties of what's happening. I know it's very difficult because these things are concerning, but rather acknowledge that there's always challenges in markets. There's always a reason to be worrying about markets. So you have to move on from that vantage point and say, long-term, the businesses that I invest in will be able to succeed and grow their earnings. And I haven't overpaid, so I just have to be patient.
Great advice. Thank you very much. That was Adrian Pask, Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth.